And if 6 weeks ago I would have said Manitowoc, Wisconsin, you would have thought I was making up the name of a city that doesn't
probably
exist.
Probably, yes.
But boy, you say Manitowoc to people who've been watching the Netflix series Making a Murderer, and everybody's got an opinion, a strong opinion. No one is lukewarm about this. Dan O'Donnell is with 1130 WISN up in Milwaukee. Dan, good morning.
How you guys doing?
Wonderful. I appreciate you spending some time with us, because you've got this podcast up now called Rebutting a Murderer.
Yes, I do. And I actually covered the Avery trial. I was in the courtroom, technically in the media staging area of the courtroom. But I was there for the entire duration of Stephen Avery's trial. I covered his case from literally the moment he walked out of prison in 2003 to when he was arrested in 2005 to when he was convicted in 2007. I covered Brendan Dassey's trial as well, and am stunned at the reaction. You know, this was 9 years ago for me, so it's been like my past, and now it's this worldwide phenomenon. In fact, you can actually see me in a couple of shots. I believe I announced that a verdict is in. And I think it's episode 8.
Okay.
This was a big part of my life, and once again, it is again.
I was going to say, ever in your wildest dreams, after all that you saw in that courtroom, did you ever think how many years down the line that it would come back the way it has in this kind of fashion?
No, I didn't. In fact, I knew the documentary filmmakers. We worked in that media staging area like kitty corner from each other. And, you know, so we would talk, and I guess I just sort of, after the trial ended, lost touch with them. I knew it would take some time to get their work up and, you know, sold and distributed. But I guess I forgot all about it because it took so long. When I was covering the trial, the defense presented what I, and as it turns out, the jury, thought was a relatively weak argument for police corruption and framing Stephen Avery. The assumptions that they were making and the presumptions that they were making based solely on coincidence and speculation and not actual real hard evidence. I didn't think that so many people would take this sort of conjecture as seriously as they have.
And just for people who haven't seen the Netflix series yet, even though this thing is a huge phenomenon, this is a scenario where a guy is wrongly convicted back in the 80s. He spends 18 years in jail. Then he gets out of jail, and this weird set of circumstances put him at the place where a body is found, and he then gets accused and ultimately convicted of murder. But the documentary leaves just about everyone with the notion that this poor guy was totally railroaded, this could not have been more unfair.
It does.
But you're watching it as a reporter through this whole thing, and you're getting all the information, the stuff that wasn't there presented in the documentary, and now you've put this thing together that says, you know what, you missed a lot.
Yeah, exactly. And that's to be expected, because what the documentary filmmakers did is they essentially embedded themselves with the Avery family. They were very tight with the family. They didn't speak to a single prosecutor, a single investigator, a single member of the Halbach family. All of them declined to participate in the documentary because it was very obvious from the get-go that they were going to go at this from the perspective that Avery is being railroaded. As such, just as a defense attorney would do, they present their case. Now, they're not bound by the rules of evidence. And here I should probably point out that I am a non-practicing attorney in Wisconsin. So if I'm using any legal jargon that, you know, your audience might not get, please stop me and let me know. But filmmakers aren't bound by the same rules of evidence. So they can speculate and they can engage in hearsay. At one point, Stephen Avery says, my friend Tammy, she said that somebody told her that they planted the car on my property. That's hearsay. That's right. Not admissible evidence, but it can work in a documentary. They never present the other side. So what I'm doing is, just as in a court of law, you get a chance to rebut a claim that's made by an opposing attorney, I am rebutting pretty much everything they say and pointing out that, look, all of their claims are based on circumstance. They never provide what's known as affirmative evidence, like a fingerprint, like a DNA sample, like any sort of bit of forensics or witness testimony that places any of the officers in a position where they did frame. Not that they could frame Stephen Avery, not that they would have reason to frame Stephen Avery, but that they did frame Stephen Avery.
We're talking with Dan O'Donnell, reporter up at 1130 WISN in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee, and was there during this Steve Avery trial, which is the subject of the Netflix hit Making a Murderer. Dan, I would argue, though, that no, certainly they're not obligated to present both sides, but they are obligated if they're going to use the word documentary.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that suggests that I'm getting information, and then I'm gleaning an opinion from it. This was clearly designed to make me sympathetic to Steve Avery.
Oh yeah, but this is the style of documentary films now. You have to understand that, like. Michael Moore has made a career out of not presenting both sides of the issue,
sure.
but Michael Moore's side of the issue. So, yes, it's presented as a documentary, but I heard one of my friends, a columnist at the Journal Sentinel named Christian Schneider, put it perfectly in political terms. Making a Murderer is basically Stephen Avery's super PAC. I mean, they are doing nothing but advocating on his behalf. I mean, so it has to be sort of looked at, and I hate to use this phrase because I do like the two filmmakers from what I remember of them so long ago. They were very nice to me. They were very kind. They were very hardworking. But it is a propaganda film, and you have to view it through that lens.
And look, it is brilliantly put together. There is no question. I mean,
it is
captivating from beginning to end.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the cinematography in that opening sequence is just brilliant. I mean, it looks like, you know, it's like The Sopranos meets Fargo. It's really a masterpiece. The score was done by the same guy who did the old HBO show Deadwood. It's just every bit of it is fantastic. But at the same time, it leaves out key evidence that points to Stephen Avery's guilt. Most notably, now they make a big deal about this blood vial that was in the Manitowoc Sheriff's Department that they could have used to plant evidence. They make no mention of the fact there was DNA from Stephen Avery's sweat on both Teresa Halbach's car key and on the hood latch of her car, which was found on Avery's property. Moreover, a bullet that was proven by ballistics to have been fired from Stephen Avery's .22 caliber rifle, which he kept above his bed at all times, had DNA on it from Teresa Halbach. That was found in the garage where Brendan Bassey, Stephen Avery's nephew, said that Avery shot her. All of this adds up to, in the jury's estimation, guilt beyond a reasonable doubt.
When you first found out about, obviously you knew they were making this, but it first comes back, what was your gut reaction when you saw so many people sympathizing with Avery? Were you like, oh my God, what's going on here? Did you have to look at this documentary and go, good Lord, they're leaving all this out? I mean, what was your gut reaction to that?
Well, my gut reaction, it's kind of weird. I sort of avoided the documentary for about a week or so.
Okay.
And it's, you know, because it was like I lived it.
Right.
It was this horrible murder. It was this, you know, I don't like watching like 9/11 documentaries either for that same reason.
Right.
And then finally it became so big. You know, I'm getting contacted by the Nancy Grace Show, which I do some reporting for, but they wanted to know all about this thing, and then I see it on Fox News. I'm like, oh my goodness! So I've got to dive into this. And from what I remember of the evidence that was presented, and this is the key thing here, guys, what the defense did not present.
Okay.
The defense mounted almost no affirmative defense.
Okay.
They had no alibi for where Stephen Avery was on October 31st. Their first witness was a guy who, he may have seen a car driving away from the Avery property.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
That's their first witness? Wait, what? They had a blood testing witness who said, well, you know, the test might have been inconclusive. No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
You know, it's like their whole thing was like, well, the only time this test has been used previously was in the O.J. case.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, wait a second. Does anybody really doubt that O.J. actually killed Ron Goldman and Nicole Brown?
Right.
I'm like, are you guys kidding me? So they do like an afternoon's worth of testimony, and rather than say, well, that's it. I'm like, well, wait a second. In your opening statement, you presented all this evidence of a frame-up. You never followed through on any of it.
Yeah.
On any of it. And now the filmmakers take this little bit of defense testimony and blow it up. And what they do is anytime like a prosecutor or one of the investigators talks, they play the scary music.
Yeah.
And like in like episode, I believe it's five, episode five, it's Andrew Colburn, who's a sheriff's sergeant, and he's accused of like planting the RAV4 Halbach's car on Avery's property. And they heavily imply that he actually had the RAV4 2 days before it was found by a volunteer searcher. Right. Now, they stop the episode where he said, are you aware that you couldn't have found the RAV4 on the 3rd because it was actually found on the 5th? He goes, yes. Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
Well, okay, wait a second. Why didn't they follow through on that? They never mentioned the RAV4 being planted again. You know why? Because that line of questioning with Dean Strang, the defense attorney, went nowhere. There was no proof that he had the RAV4. There was nothing.
Wow.
Okay.
And look,
it was a phone call that he was like calling to confirm that the car that they were looking for. He was like, "What's the license plate number again?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's this. Oh, it's a RAV4. Okay, that's what we're looking for."
And that was enough to imply that somehow he was hiding it someplace.
Well, that was implying they're like, "Well, it sounds like you're looking at the car."
Yeah.
Like, what? What are you talking about?
Yeah,
yikes.
I got to tell you, I mean, I'm certainly not an attorney, but I look at this thing going, this whole thing is goofed up. I mean, the prosecution is sloppy, the defense is sloppy.
Oh yeah.
It is full of holes. I don't even, you know, and there's so many weird things going on anyway, on top of this very horrific, very complex situation. But I encourage folks, if you've been watching Making a Murderer, look for Dan's podcast. It's over at newstalk1130.com under Common Sense Central, and it's called Rebutting a Murderer. And what, you have 4 or 5 episodes there now? Is that where you are?
We've got 4. I'm doing 2 a day every day this week.
Okay.
So episode 5 and episode 6 will be up by this afternoon.
If you are of the opinion that this guy is totally innocent and the system just completely broke down on him, I just encourage you to listen to a couple of these things.
Get both sides.
And because you'll then more. Well, I tell you what. I mean, I'm still at the position of I don't know what the hell's going on. I mean, that's the thing that's so amazing, I guess, about this story is it is so incredibly confusing, complex, and weird, weirder than any fiction that could ever be written.
Well, you know, it really goes to show how important in the justice system witness testimony is, because what I got from watching this and watching the trial was that we watch shows like CSI and all these crime procedurals. And we assume that there's going to be a mountain of DNA evidence and blood splattered all over a room and all this. And that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It is very difficult to obtain this forensic evidence. And oftentimes, as in the case of Avery, it's incomplete or there isn't a whole lot of evidence. So we rely on witness testimony. And you know what I'm saying? It's when there is no witness, it's very difficult for the prosecution. But to me, the bullet was, pardon the pun, a smoking gun.
It's compelling stuff on both sides. If you haven't gotten into the Netflix documentary, I highly recommend it. But I also recommend that you check out Dan O'Donnell's Rebutting a Murderer podcast over at newstalk1130.com. Dan, I could probably talk to you about this for another hour, but it's fascinating stuff.
I could talk about it too, guys.
Yeah, I appreciate your efforts and I appreciate the podcast. Thank you for your time.
Thanks.
Well, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.